This is Joey from the So Wizard Podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, a.k.a. the Podcast Father, on this journey sharing great things content creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
Welcome to another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, a.k.a. Podcast Father. Jay from the Hostile Environment. Gosh, can't talk, Jay. What's your freaking podcast called, man?
It is the Hostile Environment Podcast, my good friend.
Yeah, I know it is. I just wanted to have you talk. They don't want to hear me. People don't listen to this podcast to hear me talk. I can't freaking talk to save my life. They want to hear people like you and the people I have conversations with, not boring old Jeff.
All right.
Speaking of content creators, I had a conversation with Jack Resider from the Darknet Diaries podcast. Did you get to check out some of Jack's work?
Yeah, I went on his wiki page. His download numbers are astonishing. I was blown away. When I saw his numbers, I was like, wow, this guy's big time. And then I saw what he did, and I was like, wow, that is a very ballsy profession to take on. I wouldn't want to personally talk to hackers because I'd be so scared that I'd piss them off and they'd take everything from me and my whole life would be ruined. So this guy's got some stones on him. So good for him.
You have that personality for sure, Jay, that somebody would love to just hack into your bank account. No, but he really just loves talking about, he loves podcasting, right? He does this for a living now. He's worked hard and he's built this really great thing. Well, a lot of it's based on the fact that there's a community out there. You don't think about these things, right? There's a hackers community, people that are interested in this. And he's a big part of it. And he has a really great podcast. More importantly, as it relates to this podcast, he is a great mind for this industry. And it's a great conversation for content creators to hear.
Very interested to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, Jay couldn't even figure out how to click on the link to get to this recording. So
thanks for that.
All jokes aside, we'll cut the crap and we'll get into this awesome conversation here. But before we do that, I got to take care of a little business. Woo, woo, woo. You know it. This podcast would not exist without the awesome engagement I get from the community. If you're not in contact with me, I highly encourage you to reach out to me on Twitter at @podcast_father or hit me up under the contact section on my website, podcastfather.com. If you really like what I'm doing, you can buy me a coffee or leave me a review on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast listening platform. All the music used on this podcast, I credit to the artist Young Karts. Go to the site and listen to the music, youngkartbeats.com. The sponsors of this podcast are amazing. I highly encourage you to show them love just like you do me. PodPage, you can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a beautiful, listener-friendly podcast website from your RSS feed. Customize the design, get a professional look going. You'll be proud of all your work in just a few clicks. Make it easy and simple. Make sure you go online and create your podcast website, podpage.com. Flex Uptime. If you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to Indie Drop-In. Get more listeners, get more exposure. Submit an episode. Go online to indiedropin.com/creators. Oh, hell yeah, Riverside FM is great. Your online recording studio. The easiest way to record studio, quality podcasts, and video interviews from anywhere. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you must go to riverside.fm right now to get started. That's enough of the business. Now it's time to jump into this awesome conversation, which is powered by riverside.fm. Jack, I really appreciate you stopping by to chat with me today. I know you're the busiest man in the world, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be here. I love talking about podcasting, so I hope to have a good conversation here. I'm excited about it.
You are the ultimate podcaster, right?
I don't know about the ultimate, but I am a...
No, I'm just kidding, but I do want to give you a second to introduce yourself and talk about your podcast.
Sure. So my name is Jack Resider. I make the podcast Darknet Diaries. It's a podcast that's kind of like true crime meets cybercrime. So it's stories about hackers and this kind of thing. And it's a show that I wanted there to exist, but I couldn't find it when, you know, I'm a big podcast fan myself. And so my background is in cybersecurity. I was a network security engineer. And I had known about all these stories that are going on, but wasn't really hearing the whole story, right? You hear the breaking news, like, okay, you know, Sony got hacked or whatever. But you don't hear a year later of, oh, well, we found the people who did it, and they were indicted. And then another year later after that, they were arrested. And now a year after that, they were brought to court. And here's what happened in court. And here's whether or not they were guilty or not. And so I wanted a show that kind of brought all that together so I could hear the whole story, or somebody from the trenches, right? Somebody who's been there and did the hack or was a victim of the hack or something like that, and hear firsthand experiences of this kind of stuff. And yeah, that just didn't exist in a like a storytelling format. And I was familiar with all these stories, but not familiar with podcasting. I decided to read a book on how to do it, and the rest is history. I was able to quit my job and podcast full time. And today I get about 300,000 downloads per episode. And yeah, it's my full-time job, and it's making more than I was as a network engineer.
Fascinating. I love that, man. That's awesome. When did you release the first episode?
I think it was 2018, a little over 3 years ago.
What book did you read? You mentioned reading the book.
Yeah, the book was called Out on the Wire. And, you know, some of the people I was really looking up to were Ira Glass, Roman Mars, Chad Abumrad from Radiolab. These were people who I thought were masters storytellers of audio storytelling. So I was like, well, what do they know? And so my first Google search was, how does Radiolab make their podcast, which didn't get me anywhere. But the book Out on the Wire actually interviews all these people and brings, you know, asks them those questions of what makes a good story, what makes a listener continue to listen on. Because you may have heard these stories where you're in the car and you get to where you're going and the story's so good that you don't want to get out of the car, right? So you just sit there in the driveway enjoying the rest of the show. And you're like, come on, and hurry up, I'm late for whatever I need to get to. And so I'm like, what is that? What is that that keeps us glued to the audio? And that's kind of, it unfolds in there. And so that to me was the craft. That was the important ingredient that I needed to get right, is how to tell a good story. And I think all podcasters can benefit from how to tell a good story, whether you're a sports podcast or news or whatever. I think good storytelling is what keeps us glued. It's what keeps us there for the next minute. What's going to happen next? And it's a great skill.
I agree. And I think the big thing for me, like I also mentioned on this podcast, and a lot of people are saying that they find value from it. And I agree in the sense that I learn a lot from storytelling, right? There's nothing wrong with like listing out, you do this in order 1, 2, 3. But a lot of times I can learn more from a good story.
Yeah, I like that approach too. It's more entertaining. And so you kind of retain it better versus just hearing the news could be dry and you don't get all the details or whatever the case is. It's just a little bit more boring. But if you have a well-crafted story, it hits you harder and you remember things better.
You listed some of the content creators. What is really the first podcast that you remember listening to? Because I can go back way, like really 15 years ago almost, but in 2014, you know, Apple brings it on board, integrated on the phones. And since then, it really, over that 2 or 3 years after that, it just got huge.
Yeah, I think I had either a second or third generation iPod and was connecting to iTunes and downloading and then sending it to the iPod. It was a really cumbersome experience. I remember listening to one about World of Warcraft, and I was like, oh, I play that game a lot. Let's listen to a podcast about that. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I was just bored out of my mind. I was like, what are you talking to? Like, there's just nothing of like helpful here to me. Maybe I had the wrong show, but I kind of gave up on podcasts, but I've always been a fan of like the NPR kind of shows, right? So This American Life, Radiolab, that stuff I had been listening to for decades, you know, and it wasn't in podcast form. It was just on the radio whenever you're lucky enough to hear it. And so when that showed up in podcasts, I was like, oh, this is the way to distribute your audio shows in a very effective way. I don't have to wait for it to come on or, you know, plan to take a drive at that exact same time. I just tune in whenever I want. And so to me, that's when things really started clicking in my head. And I guess it was after Serial that I really got addicted to them. And I was just like, wow, there's so many good shows out there. And I was just listening to everything.
That says something, you know, the power of Serial. When, generally speaking, most conversations that I have with people that have been doing this for several years, that's the same thing they say, right? Like Serial. And that's myself included in that conversation. It is just such a huge impact. And that seems to be a across the board general conception there.
Yeah. And I think it was kind of one of those, I didn't know where to consume this stuff. And then when I said, okay, I'll give Serial a try. And then you see all these other shows that you're like, oh yeah, I remember loving that show. And, you know, I've listened to this on the radio, and Car Talk is on here too. Let's listen to Car Talk. Like it was just like, oh, all my friends are here.
Yeah. And it really showed the power of podcasting too.
Yeah, the power is sort of like, you know, you can watch TV and you get an interview with somebody for like 5 minutes and you're like, oh, that was cool. I got to see them, you know, for 5 minutes. But with podcasting, there's endless time. You could have a 4-hour interview with someone and you could still want more if it's a really good person you like. So I think that's kind of the power as well, is there's no time limits.
So going back to the very beginning, like when you really started to really, you thought about doing it. You said, hey, you read the book, I'm going to do it. What struggles did you have in the very beginning?
Yeah, I mean, making a show that's like such high production as This American Life was a huge struggle. I had no idea how to just, you know, get the scaffolding right. Like, do I record the interview first? Do I write the script first? Do I research first? Like, what do I even do here? And it was just like a mess. And so just going through the motions of getting interviews, that was a big hurdle as well, right? I was calling up all these people. Actually, the first episode I was working on, I worked on it for a whole month. It wasn't turning out the way I wanted. It was too big of a story. It was too complicated. I wasn't getting any of the people that I wanted to talk. So I just spent a whole month on that and scratched it. I still haven't even gotten back to that story. But, you know, so I picked up an easier story and I was like, okay, let's find one that's easier to cover, that has more, you know, stuff out there, but it's not as long. And I was able to find some interviews, so, you know, get some people to talk about it. And get some interviews. And that was just such a thrill to get my first interview. Like, I couldn't believe it. It was some guy in another country too. So it was like extra exciting to, I just called, you know, Europe. And it was, yeah, I mean, that was fun. But yeah, then putting it all together. So like I said, my show is highly produced. And so I have to do the interview. Then I have to write my narration. Then I have to read my narration. Then I have to cut the interview up to fit in the narration. And then I actually add music, you know, and I assemble it all together. So my narration, then the tape, my narration, then the tape, then I add music. And then I listen to it to see how it sounds. And of course, I have 1,000 edits I want to do after that. So learning how to do all that, it just was the biggest task of all.
You brought up an interesting point as far as guests go. I imagine it's kind of like you're dealing with guests that this is a topic that they might not always be comfortable discussing. It's got to be hard to get some guests, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, it was definitely hard to get guests in the beginning. I was tapping on a lot of shoulders and just getting no response, like 9 out of 10 times, just no response at all of like, hey, I know you have this story. Are you able to talk about it on a podcast? And like, who are you? I don't even know who you are. I'm not even going to reply. One out of 10 was like, no. And then, so it was like only like 1 out of 50 that was actually like, yeah, sure, let's do it. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I get these people who are like going to tell me about the time where they did this crime and they went to prison and it was the worst time of their life. And I'm like, let's relive that. That sounds like a great story to tell. Let's talk about that. And at first I was really worried about that. I was like, man, how am I going to get this person to open up to tell me the worst day of their life in great detail? Like, I don't want to go slow over those parts. Those are the best parts. That's the audio I'm looking for. And so I was really hesitant. But after I did one, the person was like, that was really like almost therapeutic to me. Just like, nobody's asked me all these questions of what did it feel like and what was going through your head and what were you thinking about your parents, you know, as you're watching them as you're getting taken away by the police. Like, what were you thinking about what was going on with them? And like, people were surprisingly appreciative of letting it all out. It was cathartic to them. And so I realized like, oh, okay, this isn't as hard as I thought. So I was able to get them to open up. But I mean, some of the places I was finding people at the beginning were, there's a lot of hacker conferences where people go to a conference and they talk about this time they battled an attacker or this time that they hacked into something. And so they've already given this talk publicly on stage. These talks are often recorded and they're on YouTube. So I just went through tons of these talks and I found the ones that I liked. And I said, hey, you already gave this talk at this conference. Would you be able to give that talk again on a podcast? And oh, sure. Yeah. So that's how I was able to find some good ones just at the beginning. The stories were already out there. It's just a matter of getting it in a podcast form.
I mean, how much do you think hackers, like people that have been on your show as guests or people that have done it before, how much of them do you think listen to your show?
I went to a hacker conference 3 years ago, and it must have been 2 years ago. And I just sat down at a booth and I put my stickers out, and like 1 out of 4 or 5 people knew about my show. So people at these hacker conferences definitely know who I am. I think a lot of them listen, and it's not just the hackers, but the defenders as well. They want to know how people did the attack. And it even goes bigger than that. You know, nation state actors such as NSA listens to the show. FBI, CIA, police department reaches out to me all the time saying, wow, that was a great episode. We battle that same thing all the time. thanks for putting it out there, right? They're not like asking for my sources or anything, but they're like, yeah, I appreciate all the information you laid out there. It gives me a better understanding that I'm not the only one facing this or whatever, you know? And it's fascinating to see all the different people who are listening. And yes, a lot of teenagers reach out to me. It's really weird. Like 16, 17-year-olds just sometimes message me on Discord or come up to me at these hacker conferences and they're like, hey, I sell botnet access and or I sell 0 days. And I was just wondering, I just wanted to let you know in case you wanted to interview me. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to interview anyone under 18 without your parents' permission. But that is crazy. And you really need to be safe because you are heading in a wrong direction, man.
It cracks me up because, you know, we talk with Alberto Hill before here. He's always sharing these things and people just blatantly reaching out to him and say, hey, I want to be a hacker. Teach me how to be a hacker. It just cracks me up.
Yeah, there's you put anything like that in your Twitter bio or whatever, there's always somebody who's like, oh, can you hack this Facebook account for me or this, you know, Twitter account or something? And I'm like, no, stop asking people for this.
I think it's awesome, though, because I know that on this podcast a lot, we talk about the community piece and the engagement piece with the community. My situation, it's a lot of podcasters, content creators. And yours, though, it's like a whole community here of hackers and people interested in it. And I'm not going to lie, before I started listening to your podcast, which has been a while now, I had never really thought about that. Like, there is a community out there for that, just like there is anything else. So, no, it's awesome that you bring that up.
At least 5 different Discord servers of hacker communities, and there's, you know, conferences, probably 4 a month of just hacking conferences. And there's even hacker spaces in every town of just like, come and let's practice hacking. It's really a big community.
I love it. It's awesome. So, man, in the beginning, how long did it take? Like, how many episodes in before you were like, I've really got something pretty good here? Like, you had really big confidence in it.
Yeah. So I think there were a couple times where I felt the wind push my back and like I knew I was like going somewhere. When I hit maybe the first 200 downloads per episode is when I was at one of these conferences and somebody came to me and was like, I listened to your show and I listened to every single episode and I can't wait for the next one. And I was like, you know, I was only like episode 6 or 7 at that point. And I was like, this is a person I don't know. And that's like an amazing experience. You know, when you first start, you're like, okay, friends and family, listen to this. And then when somebody you never met before and has no connections to your friends and family finds it and loves it and says they can't wait for the next one, that's when you know something special. A total stranger who isn't just listening out of sympathy is like, oh, that's great. That's just what I want. I need more of that. Then you know you're making an impact on someone's life, right? When they want more of whatever you're making. And they would miss you when you stop making it. And so that kind of, you know, I think that was around 150 to 250 downloads per episode is when I felt that first, who are these people? And I don't know who any of them are, but they're fans and that's amazing. And so that's kind of like, I got an early thing like, whoa, something's good going on here. I need to keep this up. I don't go to many conferences, but I remember these moments because when I went to another conference like a year later and I said, anybody want to meet up? You know, I'm going to be at this location on this time and stuff. And, you know, 50 people showed up and they were all just loving that to meet me and to tell me about their favorite episodes and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is just so crazy that these people appreciate it and so much. And I mean, so one person even put $20 in my hand and said, I want to thank you. Here's some money. You've enriched my life more and just keep going. Like, I want to make sure you've got what you need to keep it up because I want more. And so like, that's amazing to somebody just walk up to me and do that. So yeah, I mean, those were moments where the fans made it clear that they love it and wanted more. And that's when I felt like I had something special here. Cause even if just 10 or 20 people love it that much and they just like, it's definitely helping them in some way and they would miss it if it were to turn off, then I know that that could grow because that's just an early adoption. If it was exposed to thousands of people, then that would mean hundreds of people would love it or whatever the case is, right? So it's just a matter of exposing it to more people at that point. And I always make it clear to other podcasters that you really need to start at this part is to make an impact to your audience, make them love it. And before you start trying to spread it, if you try to market it, you might be like working real hard to get someone to listen. And then they're like, yeah, it's just not for me or whatever. And now you just wasted all your time, you know, hustling to get a new listener and they turned it off. And maybe your existing listeners are turning it off too. Like, yeah, I think I've had enough of this. But if you start with let's make this as amazing as possible. And each episode, we're going to make it better. And we're going to listen to the audience to see what they want even more. And we're just going to keep delivering and surprising and amazing our current listeners. Instead of trying to find more, those current listeners are going to be the ones who spread the word for you. You know, 150 raving fans are 150 people who are marketers, right? They're telling their friends at work. They're telling their family. And yeah, I mean, that was kind of my early strategy is just let's make sure it's a great show to start with before we do anything else. And I can go into marketing and monetization later, but that's always the biggest, the first step to get over.
I'm going to take a minute here to tell you about a fine sponsor of this podcast, Indie Drop-In. If you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to be featured on Indie Drop-In shows. If your episode meets some minimum requirements, Indie Drop-In will play your episode to real listeners. The best part is the listeners like your show. Indie Drop-In provides easy links for them to subscribe. It's 100% free. You get to drop your feed into a established feed that already has actual, real listeners. This is great, guys. This is an amazing way to grow your audience. These listeners are already there. They listen to your episode on Indie Drop-In feed. They will go over and find your podcast and become a subscriber and love it. Greg, the creator of Indie Drop-In, just absolutely loves being involved in the independent podcast community. He is a great podcast mind. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Indie Drop-In. But more importantly, go to indiedropin.com/creators. Get the submission going and submit an episode of your podcast into the Indie Drop-In feed. Hurry now. Get to it. Yeah, I agree. And it's like a balance that has to be even, like, you really do have to be focused on creating great content. But when you just try to market it right off the bat, you have to be careful exactly how you're approaching it. And I think that's where you see a lot of people get burnt out like really fast. And you see a lot of podcasts die off pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think the statistic is like half of all podcasts don't even make it past 7 episodes. And so if you're looking at like some goals, I think goal number one should just be get past 7 episodes. Because if you do that, you're better than 50% of the shows out there. But it's kind of one of those things you want to plant your seeds in the spring and harvest it in the fall. And a lot of people just think, hey, I have 3 episodes out. Where's the audience? How come I didn't like go viral or what? It's, screw this. I'm out of here. And they just give up way too fast. And I mean, for me, it was almost a year before I was monetizing mine. And, you know, I was just going crazy with marketing it for a good 6 months before even thinking about monetizing it.
We'll jump back into all that in a second. So real quick, though, what was the podcasting landscape like then? And how is it different from now? When you first started, we're going back to like 2018. It's been a lot of changes in the last 3 years.
I'm not sure. I mean, I feel like, so at the time, I think there were a lot less celebrity podcasters. Since then, a lot of celebrities showed up. And I think some people complain about that. They're like, oh, well, look at this person. They have, a million followers on Twitter and they start a podcast and all of a sudden they're top of the charts. And I'm fine with that. That's not a problem because those people spent 10 years trying to find an acting job and getting turned down every single time they applied until they finally got their break, which was on some crappy TV show that nobody ever watched. And then from there, some producer watched it and said, oh, let's get that person on a bigger show. And so they really spent their time getting somewhere in life, getting to that 1 million followers, right? And so they can use their audience to then go to the next thing, right? I was starting from nothing. And so I didn't have that experience. And I knew, okay, well, I should get a Twitter following. I should get an Instagram following, a Facebook following, a Reddit channel going, like everything I could think of. Like, let's just build not just one audience, but multiple audiences so that I have ways to communicate to the audience and ways to tell them, you know, my show's up for a reward. I need your vote or something like that, you know, ways to just get them to do stuff I want sometimes. But yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot less celebrity shows out.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot less podcasts. I know that a lot, COVID kind of changed a lot of that in a way. Not that, like you said, everybody makes it, but still.
Yeah.
Man, jumping back to like what you just said, and you're a great person to talk to about this because sometimes I think that we can get lost in the shuffle in everyday lives and forget that no matter how popular somebody's become, they did have a beginning. And you're a great example of that. Like you just said, you started out with nothing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, I want to make a podcast like Joe Rogan. And they jump in. Well, Joe Rogan was like podcasting for like 8 years before anyone even listened to him. Like his show just wasn't that popular. And so you're trying to copy someone that's been at it for 15 years. You know, it's not the same and you're not going to even come close. You've got to work at this for a long time. But some shows I appreciated were ones that have like anonymous hosts or were created by people who were no names, such as Case File, right? That's an anonymous host created this show. I mean, by definition, they have nobody. They're a nobody. They are nobody. They're anonymous, right? So they had to build up their whole thing from nothing. Another person is Aaron Mankey for Lore. He was a nobody when he started podcasting. He wanted to be an author, but he wasn't selling any books. And so, you know, these people are like, okay, I looked at them like, how did you get your legs moving underneath you and get something going? This was my inspiration, not people who were celebrities or Joe Rogan or whatever who had these millions of followers already, but the ones who had zero followers to start with when they started their podcast. All of those ones were making great content. And I was like, I guess that's the trick there is just make something great that people love.
You talked about like Case File. You're absolutely right. And that is still really anonymous. I mean, that hasn't changed any, even no matter how popular it's got, it's still an anonymous thing. And maybe that's like what makes it work.
Yeah. I think Swindled is another one with an anonymous host, and that one's getting bigger and bigger. So yeah, I mean, it's possible to start as a nobody, and I started as a nobody. I guess I could say that, you know, before podcasting, I had a blog and people were following me because I had some good tips on network engineering on my blog. Yeah, it wasn't that much.
You talked about how, you know, and a lot of new podcasters listen to this, so this kind of information is great. You talked about how you looked at some of these podcasters or podcasts and you kind of saw what they did and you're looking into what they did. Can you give some examples of that?
So I like to look at like successful podcasters' origin stories. This was something I was really obsessive over at the beginning. Like, how did you get on the top of the charts? Let's rewind to when you started. And you know, some people had this background in audio, right? So Science Versus, right? So Science Versus is made by a lady, is from Australia. And in Australia, she was working at the ABC, the Australian Broadcast Company. And so she had a past in broadcasting. And it was Gimlet who saw the potential in her and said, oh, let's acquire this show. And these kind of things are fascinating to me. Like, okay, you had like a special ability that you already had this broadcasting experience. And that's what kind of, you know, got your show acquired by Gimlet. That's kind of a big deal, right? So I saw that, right? So some people had, you know, notoriety. So that got their show off the ground. Some people had experience in broadcast or journalism or radio or something like that to begin with. So that's how they were able to get their leg up. But other people were just good at creating, right? So they had made something good. Then maybe they got lucky and it got listed in an article or featured in a podcast app like Apple Podcasts. And they just kind of kept jumping off of that. Maybe they won an award or something like that. So they kind of fought for every little step up to get like a little bit more of a tier and more audience. Those were some of the more fascinating ones.
How much do you think people should worry about equipment in the beginning? Well, and you're talking about quality and all that. How much at the very beginning should you worry about that?
I don't think you should. I think you should get a basic quality, which you can do fairly easy. I mean, even if all you have is just your cell phone, go in a closet, go under the cover and talk into your cell phone and you'll have pretty good audio quality. Like you'll get 90% of the way there. And getting that last 10% is going to cost you thousands of dollars. And so it's just not worth it at the beginning. So for me, I started with the old dusty microphone I had in a drawer, which was the Blue Snowball Ice. It's like a $35 mic. It was a USB mic. And I did it under a blanket. It's not a great mic, but I did it under a blanket. And I was really close to the mic. I just kind of tuned it just right so that it had a nice warm feel because I was going after a specific kind of sound. And after that, I borrowed a microphone from my friend, the Shure SM58. And I liked that one, so I bought it for like $70. But now we're talking about XLR mics. So now I had to get XLR to USB interface, which I got the Scarlett 2i whatever, and worked with that for a while. But then it wasn't until after I had Patreon going and people were giving me money that I saw, okay, now I can afford to actually buy some pro-grade equipment. Let's take this pro, right? So it was, at the beginning, it was just kind of hobby, and let's just mess around, see if this is, you know, if it has any teeth, is anyone interested? It was only after my audience actually was able to fund me that I was able to use their money that they were giving me to buy my dream mic, which is I'm using right now, the SM7B. I like to be scrappy with what I have. I don't like having kind of like unlimited ability, and you kind of get stuck creatively if you have like unlimited options, right? And so if you're going to make music and you have 100 different instruments to make music with, you don't even know where to begin. which instrument do you pick up first? But if you want to make music and the only thing you have is a whistle, then you're going to find something interesting to do with that whistle, right? And so I really like this. Let's put the lid on the creativity and see how far we can push that lid before we need to get rid of it. But there's kind of two trains of thoughts here, because if I don't put that much effort into my podcast and I don't buy any extra equipment, then I don't have skin in the game. And so it's easier to quit. And this is kind of what people do with Anchor, right? Oh, that's easy. I don't have to pay anything for it. I could just jump in. It's free. I don't even have to get any equipment. I could just talk into my phone. This is perfect. And then you'd get nothing out of it. And so you quit, right? So there's this lack of skin in the game could make you quit easier as well. Versus, well, I paid $1,000 for this equipment. I might as well make it work. Let's podcast for a whole year and see how it goes or something like that. So there are kind of two trains of thoughts here. I like using what I have to begin with and working my way up.
I ask you that, and I love the answer, by the way. That's incredible. The under the blanket and everything, that just goes to show you, like you said, you really have to build and work yourself up to that point. But I do get asked that a lot about the equipment. Sorry about that. No, I do get asked that a lot about the equipment, speaking of which I just knocked over. But I think the equipment is something that kind of gets overanalyzed, and really people are just too worried about it, especially in the beginning. They want to take advice from a lot of different people, and a lot of people have a lot of different things to say.
Yeah, I think there was this funny thing I heard once where I think Stephen King was at a conference talking, and somebody asked him, what kind of pencil do you use to write your stories with, or what typewriter? He's like, that's the last question you should be asking me on how to like be a creative writer, is what kind of equipment I have. Like, that's not what gets delivered. What's delivered are the stories and the thoughts and the ideas, and the production of it all is not the important part here. The important part is the content. And I agree with that entirely, is the content will completely eclipse anything that your equipment's going to do. And that should, your content should push the limits of your equipment, and you wish your equipment could always do better for some reason, right? It shouldn't be like, okay, I've got the best equipment, but my content is lacking. Like, that's the wrong ratio balance to have. You should always have incredible content and do what you can with the equipment you have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. The engagement with the indie podcast community is great. Over the last 8 months, I've really met a lot of people, and it's been awesome. And they're very engaged with what I'm doing, and I'm thankful. But a lot of people struggle with that. They seem to really struggle on how to find that right community and how to get that right engagement. What advice do you have on that? You talked about blogs, conferences. What other things can you think of?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things I did once I, you know, had a good idea that the show has got something, it's worth spreading, it's ready to market. My topic, my niche is security, cybersecurity, right? So what I did was I reached out to tons of people who are writing content about this, right? So that's bloggers, that's newsletter writers, that's YouTubers, that's other podcasters, book writers, even just influencers on social media, like people who are in that space tweeting a lot about this. I was like, here is a new podcast that I'm sure you'll love, and maybe your audience loves too, you know, or something like that. It was just a nice, simple thing. And not a lot of them, but like maybe 2%. So I think I emailed 200 people or sent messages to 200 people in this space. I mean, like 200 different journalists, bloggers, YouTubers, whatever. And like two or three of them actually did something with it. So one of them was a person who has 2 million followers on Twitter. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is a great podcast. And he started tweeting about it. Like, you should listen to this podcast. And the other one was the Guardian newspaper. And they're like, okay, we'll write about it. And so they wrote about the podcast in one of their articles. And I was also giving talks at conferences and trying to appear on other security podcasts, just getting like embedding myself in my community, right? Being everywhere that my community is. So if my community is on Twitter, I'm going to be on Twitter. If they're listening to podcasts, I'm going to be on their podcast. Like, where are they absorbing their content from the internet? That's where I'm going to try to be, so I could put my show in front of them. And yeah, I mean, that's what you should do. You should figure out who would be your favorite kind of person to listen, who would get the most value out of your show, And if you're having trouble because you're like, oh, we do a variety show and we don't really have a specific topic every time, you can still narrow it down. Like, is your show for religious people? Is your show for, old people, young people, people from a specific country? Like, you can still try to find pockets where these kind of people exist, because it can't possibly be for everyone. There's just no way. And even if it is, like, okay, yeah, it could be for everyone because it's just world news, it's still something that I think you can narrow down to target specific people.
How niche do you think they should, podcasters should try to be? Because if you're really niche, it's like kind of swinging for the fences. It could really work out for you, or it could be a complete miss if not done right.
I don't have a specific recommendation, but I mean, we can go as crazy as you want. Like, I am deep into cryptocurrency, right? And I don't want to hear the basics of cryptocurrency. I want to hear something about cryptocurrency that I have been studying for 10 years and still don't know, right? So I'm that deep. Like, give me something that's so deep and so interesting and fascinating deep down. It's like, discover, show me something I don't know, right? And so I want those kind of shows, and I thrive on those kind of shows that just get me the juiciest, most specific pieces of information, as opposed to the wide audiences. You can go as deep as you want. And I think the thing is that you should satisfy the audience. If they want to go deep, get deep with them. Don't be afraid to get deep. If they want just the basics, then stay shallow and don't get too deep, right? So I think if you have like a good personality, or if you're got some sort of character, that could go wide, right? I would love to see certain, comedians talk about things that you would never expect them to talk about, just to hear like how they handle that situation or whatever, just because that would be a hilarious situation. But I don't need my newscaster, my favorite newscaster, to talk about something that's totally out of their wheelhouse, because I don't think that they're going to be able to cover, I don't think they're going to be saying something, helpful in that in that area of expertise, because it's just out of their area. It depends on the personality of the podcaster, I suppose. If they're able to field lots of different questions, every now and then on Reddit, I see someone like, I just started a podcast, give me some questions I can answer. And I love pitching them questions that they do not want to answer. Like, let's say a doula is trying to help someone give birth and their water breaks 2 hours too early. What should they do? Like, there's no way you're going to want to answer that if you're just like a random show, right? So you really need to like figure out what is in your lens of what would be on your show, and then try to find that kind of content only, because there's no way you're going to go everywhere. And I really am a fan of like to pick a 10-word description for your show. Everything that goes in your show should go through that lens. And so sometimes you're not sure of like, oh, this is a really interesting person, but it doesn't quite fit our show, should we have them on or not? And you can kind of go back to say, okay, well, what's our show about? And so my 10-word description of my show is true stories from the dark side of the internet. It's nice to know that that's what I need to fit in, right? So sometimes people have stories that have nothing to do with the internet. And I'm like, oh, that's a great story, but it's not related to the internet at all. So I'm not going to really include it here. And then some people have made up stories. And I'm like, well, my show's about true stories, so I can't really put a made up story in there, right? So I've got this like filter that everything has to go through that filter in order for it to fit into my show. And I think that's really helpful, because it helps you define your show. It helps you define your mission of what you're even trying to accomplish here. And if you have it too wide and too loose, you might not find that core audience, and you'll struggle trying to figure out who it's even for.
I love that 10-word description. I think in simple terms, it keeps it simple, right? Keeps you on track. Yeah.
I got that out of the book called Make Noise by Eric Nuzum. It's a great book about podcasting. And I think he worked at Audible Podcasts for a while. And it's a great book, Make Noise.
You have had a lot of success off Apple Podcast subscriptions. Talk to us about that before we talk more Patreon.
Yep. So this year, Apple launched a way for podcasters to allow their listeners to pay for the show. And you can offer extra things like bonus content, ad-free content, early access, or just to put the whole show behind paywall. So I saw this and I was like, well, I already have Patreon, which is basically the same thing. You can pay for it and then you get bonus content. So I might as well enable it for Apple and see how it goes. And I did, and it went really well. Apple seemed to kind of put it in front of my listeners frequently. So they saw it like, oh, you could pay for extra stuff. And so I didn't do any real marketing to say, hey, find me on Apple Podcasts and hit the paid subscription button and buy the show there or whatever. And it just was getting paid listeners just all the time. Like, it was a great decision. And maybe it was because I was a early mover on that and I jumped on it in the first few weeks that they launched it. But that went really well. And so now I have a few hundred paid listeners on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started. And I remember reading that in Pod News about the success of that. And I think it's awesome. Now, a lot of people that have had, you know, other podcasts that have had success with that did put a little bit more behind the paid part and have lost some of the listenership that they had before, which they're more than willing to do so, right? Because of the payoff.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I'm worried about that. Mm-hmm. So I always want my main feed to be free and out there for anyone to listen to. I don't want to put the bulk of the show behind any sort of paywalls. It's only for like the people who are just like, I want more. I think there's some value there that they could pay for if they wanted it that bad. And that's why I have the bonus content. But I really get worried about shows that put their entire show behind a paywall or go exclusive, like for, you know, Spotify or something, because they absolutely do cut their audience down significantly when they go exclusive or behind a paywall. I would say only 1%, less than 1% of my audience pays for the show. And so if I would just go full pay, could I bump that up to 5%, right? So I'm knocking my audience down 95%, which you gotta question yourself. Am I here just for the money? Or am I here to educate people? Or am I here to make an impact, to make a change, to change the conversation, to enlighten? Am I here to tell stories? Like, you have to figure out what your ultimate goal is in podcasting. And for me, that's education. I really get a thrill off of seeing somebody send me an email saying I was a mechanic and I listened to your show and I quit my job and I am now going into cybersecurity because it sounds like so much fun and I've always wanted to do that. And thank you for changing my career. And then they follow up like 2 months later, I got my first job in this space. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy that I got this person to like change their whole life. And I didn't even try. Like, it's just like, this is to me like super fun. So education is my primary, like, underlining, this is what I'm here for. And if that's the case, I'm not going to put it behind a paywall. I want to educate as many people as I can. And so you have to kind of balance out what's your ultimate goal in all this.
What, as far as a Patreon, because I get asked a lot about Patreon, what as far as a Patreon is a great starting point? Can you give us some advice on that?
My favorite Patreon creator, I think his name is Bill Wirtz. I always have to look it up, but he creates these funny YouTube videos. And his Patreon has zero posts, zero perks, zero information. It just says Bill Wirtz, and that's it. That's the whole Patreon page, right? So he doesn't provide any additional content. He only has that Patreon because of people who like him so much that want to give extra to say, let's support this. And I think that's what Patreon really should be there for. It's not to provide any extra content to listeners. It's to provide a way for listeners to say, hey, I want to say thank you. I want to support this. I want to hear more. And that's it. However, I have done some research on the top earning Patreon podcasts. And what I found was people give bonus content as, you know, like I've looked at the top 50, you know, most earning podcasts, and pretty much all 50 out of 50 give bonus content. So that's extra episodes. And that's the only thing I think in common as far as bonus stuff. The other thing is that a lot of popular Patreon channels have been there for like over 2 years, right? So they're not just new shows and they're killing it. And like right away, they're all like they've been established for a long time. All of them have really big, not big, but diehard fan bases. Like their fans don't listen to like 3 episodes and they're done. Their fans tune in every single episode and they're just glued. And that's something that you have to really like understand. Like, this isn't just for the casual listener. Patreon isn't for the casual listener. It's for your biggest fans. And if you don't have fans like that are tuning in every single week and they can't wait to hear the next one, then work on that before working on Patreon, right? But, you know, like I said about, you don't need to provide anything. I do provide bonus content on Patreon. And I asked Patreon for the numbers because for some reason it doesn't show it. And they said, yeah, only about 30% of your paid subscribers actually listen to the bonus content. And the same is with Apple Podcasts. So that is just so crazy that people like the show so much that they would like to give, but they don't like it. So maybe they don't know there's bonus content or know how to handle it or digest it, or maybe they don't care about it, but they don't consume the bonus stuff. So yeah, and the reason why I hesitate to give so much on Patreon is because it takes extra work to send an email to every one of them and say thank you, or to respond to all of them who have questions, or to be present for them and to send them stickers. Like, I do send stickers to all my Patreon fans, but that's a lot of work. And I spend hours and hours and hours stuffing envelopes with stickers, and I had to outsource it because I couldn't do it anymore. You got to just be careful you don't burn yourself out. And I think that's kind of the third step in podcasting, is to find a sustainable way to keep it going. And sometimes that sustainable way is money. It's like, okay, well, I don't have enough time to do work and this podcast. So what if the podcast could make some money? Then I could quit my job and I could do this full time. That's one option. Another option is to not overdo it with the podcast, roll it back to once a month or whatever, so that it's not like overwhelming you and you can still keep it going. But yeah, to find a way to keep it going is kind of the last piece of the puzzle.
You bring up an interesting point, though, and the main thing is that those people just want to support you because they like the content you're creating.
Yeah, like I said, when I saw someone at a conference and they gave me $20, I was like, this is crazy. And the thing is that I didn't start my Patreon until I had like 5 people ask me, how do I donate to the show? You have no way for me to donate. And at first I was like, I don't want to ask for donations. I don't want to have a Patreon. That just seems weird. Like, give me money. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But when people were like asking me over and over, how do I give you money? I had to enable something. And I didn't advertise Patreon. I just made it. And then whenever somebody said, okay, how do I do it? I'd like, okay, here's Patreon. And then I started to realize like, wow, this is actually working really well. I can promote this on the show and it can get it going even more. So it's good. I mean, it's a different kind of ethic in the way you support a creator. You could support them by just listening to their ads, or you could support them by giving them some money. And I like this new ethic in let's support the people we appreciate.
Yeah, great point about you got to be careful, because I know for myself, already working 60 hours a week in my full-time career, I got to be careful what I'm offering up, right? Caught a lot of crap in the past just for having like a donation part, maybe without the content, you know. Well, have extra content, but not offering up as much, because you got to be careful, because that's part of burning yourself out.
Yeah, I think I overcommitted at first and I had to pull back.
Oh, for sure. We talked about marketing. A lot of people say if you want to make money, you got to treat it like a business. You might have to spend money. We're talking to a lot of indie podcasters here, independent content creators. That's not always a possibility in the beginning, for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm fine with investing in yourself if that's what you want to do. You've got to figure out something to invest in life. You're either going to invest in some other companies, like in the stock market, or invest in like buying a house, or you can invest in yourself. And that's perfectly fine to invest in yourself if you feel like you're the one to bet on. I like the idea of mastering your craft to begin with, right? Skilling up, getting good at storytelling, getting your show better and better. And there's ways to spend money on that. There's ways to, you know, pay for workshops, pay for books, pay for mentorship if you want. You know, just figure out a way to make your show better by paying to make it better, right?
Yep.
And not necessarily with equipment, but with the content itself. So yeah, I mean, that's one way that I think probably goes the most as far as paying for marketing. But I'm a big fan of using social media to market your show, and that's not paying social media to do it. It's being, you know, having a following on social media. And let's say you have 10,000 followers and you post something versus having 100 followers and you post something. It's just going to be, you're going to get more engagement with having 10,000 followers, right? You're going to see people retweeting it, sharing it, commenting, and then that's going to hit new eyes that have never seen your show before. And, you know, the more followers you have, the more that's going to spread to new possible audiences. And so that to me is important. Let's get that Twitter following to 10,000. Let's get Instagram to 10,000, whatever the case is, because I think there's something magical about 10,000. It becomes, whoa, this is a big account. How come I haven't seen this show before? Look at this. How did I miss this? Right. And so you kind of feel like a little bit of FOMO when you find something that's cool and you realize it's got a big following. And there's some social proofing there too of like, whoa, look at this. There's 10,000 people who like this, podcast. I better get in on it too. What am I missing out on? So I'm big on growing that. And to grow that, there are some ways that you can do it using paid stuff, right? You could pay. I've paid other influencers to say, please post that you love listening to this podcast. And then they do. And now I've got people who see that and say, oh, that looks interesting. I'm going to follow that link and follow this person on Twitter or whatever. Yeah, I mean, it was just a matter of sort of paying either ads or paying other influencers to grow my social media following. And once I got it to a certain size, I was comfortable. I didn't need to pay anymore. But yeah, then, you know, with that social media following, having 10,000 people on Facebook, 10,000 people on Twitter, 10,000 people on Instagram, I'm rolling, right? Now I'm connecting with my community. I'm connecting with my listeners. I'm teaching them how to spread the show. You know, I want to see Instagram, every time I see an Instagram story with somebody saying, oh, I'm listening to the show, I just go crazy in their DMs like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for sharing this. This means the world to me that you posted this. And you celebrate those kind of things whenever somebody spreads the word for you. So that was just a big thing of let's get social media and set it on fire and see if we can get it to spread that fire without me even setting any more fires. Just get my listeners to spread that fire for me. And you kind of have to be present in that. And it takes a ton of time to get all those fires going. But that was definitely worth it to me. And then there's some like lucky strikes that you can get in there as well.
Got it. You got all those right. You didn't mention the hashtag Follow Friday though, Jack. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Follow Friday. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, don't ask me what the best method is to spread your show. I'm going to give you 10,000 methods and you need to do all 10,000 because it's a marathon. It's not a race. And it's like asking me if I was riding my bicycle across the country, what's the most effective pedal I could do to go the furthest? No, it's continually pedaling and pedaling. It's a flywheel that you have to push and push and push and push to get going until you reach like a critical mass. And then you can slow up, but you're still going to want to grow probably.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's where I was segueing towards. It's not going to work the same for everybody else. Like this podcast, Indie Podcasters, been able to do a few things monetizing, and that's just with pure engagement from the content creating community, right? You can do those things if you have that really good engagement, or you can just go after the bulk amount. Obviously, the end result ultimately for a lot of people, and that's not a bad route to go. But point being, it doesn't work the same for everybody.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it's really hard. So a lot of people just scratch their head like, where do I begin?
Mm-hmm.
You begin by just reading marketing books. There's like thousands of marketing books out there. This is not a new thing. Podcasters aren't the ones who just started marketing for the very first time ever. You know, you could learn from marketing. One of my favorite marketers is Seth Godin. You could read Gary Vaynerchuk, Crush It, on how to market things. You could read Pat Flynn, who's a podcaster who talks about superfans. There's a book out there called Superfans and how to get them and make them. And there's just a ton of marketing books out there. And so you get in there, and this was kind of one of the things is I had wanted this so bad, like for years before even making a podcast, to make it online, to make a website, to make a blog, to make a video course. I don't know. Let's just make something. And so when I finally had a podcast that was worth marketing, I was just so ripe to strike. And so I didn't need to go and read all these books. I had it all ready to go. And I was just like, okay, we need to do this campaign and this campaign and all this stuff. So I was excited to exercise that, but it is a skill. Marketing is a skill, and there's even podcasts on marketing, and you know, you can dive in and do it, and it's, you're going to be a much more effective at it than hiring someone to market it for you, because you're going to be able to craft the messaging more effectively, and you know, cause you know your show better. Like, who's going to be able to tweet for you about your show as effective as you are, right? It's just, you're going to be better at it. And you're going to know your space better and all this stuff.
I always get told, like, Jeff, you have an advantage working in marketing the last 15 years and going to college for it. But like to your point, there are basic fundamental things that you can apply to anything in life, basically, from marketing and various other things. You just can't be afraid to try to learn them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing I kind of worry about Anchor sometimes. There's this mentality of, oh, I'll take the easy route in podcasting and do this Anchor thing, because it's so easy to get started. You barely need to know anything about podcasting. But I'm afraid that that attracts the people who, as soon as something is hard, they're going to quit. And you can't do that in podcasting. You need to be able to say, okay, I know this is going to be hard, but I'm willing to get over this. I'm willing to eat the crap to get through this, because there's a lot of crap to be eaten. There's a lot of bad things that you've got to go through to get through onto the other side and make it. And so, yeah, you just have to have that mentality of like, all right, this is a bump I expected. We got to get over this. It's going to be hard. We can get through it. And you almost need like some motivational speeches like programmed in your podcast queue to get you through it.
I agree with you on the Anchor thing. I've never used Anchor, but this time around, I've created content, several different projects throughout the years, but using Captivate FM. And the team there is so hands-on and involved, and it will even give you advice along the way on those kind of things if you're not comfortable with them. It's an investment worthwhile rather than the free route. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, get used to doing hard things, and nothing will be able to stop you, you know?
Absolutely. Man, I hear the dogs barking, so I'm going to leave you with one more question here. What are some things or some goals that you have for your podcast, and what are some things you'd like to see in the podcast industry?
Yeah, my goals are to build a better team. I have the budget now to hire some you know, better producers and get a team going. And I would like to be less hands-on and be able to work on other things. Because at heart, I think all of us podcasters are creative people. We're creative because we made a podcast. And it's like unlikely that this is the one and only thing that we ever create online. And so that's the case for me, right? I want to create other things. I want to create books or videos or something else. But the podcast is consuming all my time. So I want to free up some of my time there and do some other things. But I want to say something more about indie podcasting, because this is an indie podcaster's podcast. And I had the opportunity to join a network, but I turned it down, like a big network, the one, you know, ones you've heard of for sure. But I turned it down because I am such an indie podcast fan. Like I want to be indie. And I at the same time, I wanted to know what those, I mean, I kind of applied to be in the network. So it was like, I'm curious, what do you get out of it? And what I would have gotten out of it was, you know, they would have promoted me on their network and I would have grown 10 times more or at least twice as more. And I would have been a much bigger. But the downside is that it doesn't feel like I did it, right? So as an indie podcaster, I can say, I did all this. This was built by me. I didn't, you know, have the help of a network or, you know, some of these other things. I did it all on my own. And there's such a rewarding feeling about being indie that it is just definitely worth saying no to some of these things. And so it was a tough decision to say no, but yeah, indie podcasting is where my heart is and it's where I'll be. And I don't think I'll ever be picked up by a big place, because I want to stay indie and I don't ever want to lose that status. So yeah, I really have my heart with indie podcasting.
I'm glad that you said that. And I actually tweeted something out last week, basically asking people what their definition of indie podcasting is. And a lot of people just say, if you make money, you're not indie podcasting. Or they bring up the network piece like you did and all that. So I'm glad that you bring that up, because in my opinion, you have somebody like yourself, and then you have other people, let's say like a True Crime Garage. They still own all of their content. To me, that's still indie, in my opinion. But it seems to be a question that has a lot of different answers.
Yeah, it is a lot of different answers. I think kind of roughly defined, it's you know, somebody who just does it on their own and not affiliated to their company that they work for or a business that's paying for them. or a network, a major network. I mean, there's some small indie networks, and those I would still say are indie, but, you know, some of the ones that are getting bought out for $100 million are not so much indie anymore. They're now part of Amazon or part of Spotify or something that definitely wouldn't be an indie podcast anymore. If that's the non-indie podcast, those are the commercial ones, and, you know, the ones from New York Times are not indie podcasts, then the other side of the spectrum is the ones that just don't have any funding, any, maybe you get some listeners to pay for you, and that's still fine. You're still indie. That's okay. Yeah, I mean, you're not like getting funded by some corporation saying, we own your intellectual property and you're part of our network or something. So yeah, I think it's just being on your own is what indie is to me, I suppose.
We're going to have to start calling you Indie Jack, man.
Indiana Jack.
Well, I won't hold you up forever, man. Like I said, I think a hell of a lot of you and in the content you create. So I'm just thankful that you would take a few minutes of your time to chat with me. I really mean that.
Yeah, I had a fun time. And if you want to know more about some of the things I'm talking about here, I have a whole blog on it. The blog is lime.link. That's the whole URL, lime.link. And on there are videos I have about marketing and all kinds of other things I've done. But just lots of articles on how to, you know, do well at Patreon, or how to make a great sports podcast or market a sports podcast, like just tons of articles there. So if you want more, go to lime.link.
Definitely get that in the show notes. And on closing thought here, we'll give you a second to tell everybody where to find yourself and all the awesome things you're doing.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack Reciter.
Exactly. All right. Again, Jack, man, I really appreciate it.
Sure. This was a lot of fun.
You're awesome. And we'll keep in touch. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye, Jeff.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the indie podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great.